Bringing back the fruits of the land and showing them. This is a Vayesu Bamot Bishnayim. Gigantic, tremendous fruit. Look what a productive country, land this is. So Moshe Rabbeinu somehow knew he was a sensitive leader. Shlach Lecha Anashim. Kosh Baruch Hu, you handle this problem. So he knew he sent something, there's going to be some complaint. That's why he said, Koyoshiacha Me'afas Maragwa. But and then they said the land was no good. They said the land was no good. They said the people are dying there. There's some kind of mysterious force that kills people there. It's unhealthy, unhealthy place. The air's no good. Something's wrong there. So you see, Moshe Rabbeinu knew. He knew that this is going to be a problem. What sheikh does have is two separate things. You're afraid to fight is one thing, and then the second thing is you don't want to. You're unhappy with the land. You see, there was one state that was brought about from both things. It says that brought the bechi. What are they? It says vayivku om balailahu. They cried. What kind of a cry was that? What was the cry? The cry was total disappointment. Total disappointment. The cry was, see, they were waiting and waiting to go into the land. The whole Yetzias Mitzrayim was in order to go into the land, and now they were about to reach their goal. And what did they do when the report came back? It was a state of mind in which there was total disappointment. The cry was, it's all worthless. There's no way. There's no future. There's no land. There's no nothing. It was a total reflection of a total state of disappointment. That's why the disappointment was about the land is no good. The people are powerful. We can't fight them. It didn't matter. It's not that the two are related. The two are not related intrinsically. The fact that they thought the land was no good and that the people were powerful and they couldn't overcome them, that's not that the two factors are related. They're not related intrinsically. They're related in terms of affect. In terms of the affect in the people was that they were totally disappointed. See, Moshe Rabbeinu sensed somehow that they are heading for this kind of a state of mind where they're going to feel total disappointment. They're going to feel that they're abandoned and that the whole venture has reached a dead end. The whole venture says we've gone nowhere. There's nowhere to go. It's all over. Everything we thought about is going to happen will never happen. That was Vayivku Om Balailo. That was the cry. That was the cry. Now, what kind of a... Now, if you take a look in Dvarim, it's interesting. In Dvarim, Moshe Rabbeinu talks about the people with the Meraglim when he recounts the Chait. So he says that... he says, interestingly, he says... Vateirognu in Pasuk in Dvarim Aleph Chazayin. Vateirognu v'aleichem v'tomru b'sinas ad Hashem osano chotzion ameretz Mitzrayim. Lo seis osano b'yada maravash medeno. Because God hates us, that's why he took us out of Mitzrayim, to give us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us. That sounds crazy. What kind of sense does that make? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, God hates the people, so that's why he takes them out in order to destroy them. So the Sfuna says very nicely, he says, Almashia avadnu avodazor b'Mitzrayim. Sh'afo pi sh'yesh le'el yodo l'chbo sh'esamorim l'amisim, yitam esonu b'yodom l'inakim. So he says, in other words, they weren't saying crazy things. What they were saying was that they were saying that they're not worthy. They're not worthy, basically. It was a kind of a nevis, actually. They said, the sin of we served, we are not worthy of the, we're not worthy of going into, to Eretz Yisrael. We have Averis, we have Chatayim. So, usually, that's something which Bali Musa tried to encourage such type of thinking. A person should always be, always think about he's not worthy, he does Averis. But over here, this kind of thinking really backfired. And they said, Ono anachnu olim, achinu maslo venu lemo, am gadol v'romi menu, arm gadol tzatsuris v'shamayim v'gam b'nei anachom rinu sham. So it was a total state of disappointment. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, V'amar lechem l'satsum l'asir mehem, don't be afraid of them. Ad Hashem l'kechem l'alof afneichem, hu yilochim lochem, k'chol asher osa etchem mitzrayim l'aynechem. He says, God will do battle for you just like he did in Mitzrayim. Uvamidbar asher ro'isu asher nesochad Hashem l'kechem, k'asher isu ish esbeno. Just like a man carries his son, and the entire way that you traveled until you came to this place. He says, Uvadavar zeh, and this thing, einisem maminim bar Hashem alakechem, you don't believe in God, ha'olach lefnechem baderech, losu lechem makom lechanoschem, he goes through the whole, the chazdei Hashem, ba'esh laila laroschem baderech ha'shetel chuvo v'onan yama. So what does it mean to say, what is Moshe Rabbeinu saying to them? He's saying one thing. He's saying personal disappointment is always possible. It's always, that's something which Moshe Rabbeinu sensed, that they were setting themselves up for disappointment. I don't know the details at this point, not important, but the fact is he knew that the nation is going to have some kind of an emotional reaction here, where they're going to feel it's all over. But the end of the tie to the chatoim, whatever. But there's some kind of rationalization. But the fact remains that what didn't they see? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu points out. He points out what they didn't see was, what they failed to see was, what it means to live with the Hashgachas Hashem. You see? It says, "Vamidbar Hashem Yisrael Hashem Esochar Hashem Olekecha." So what it means to say was that they failed to appreciate life under the Ashkacha, with Ashura Shechina. They had Ashura Shechina. Ashura Shechina preceded Eretz Yisrael. Of course, Ashura Shechina was in the Midbar. That's why when they had the camp, the whole setup of the camp was Ashura Shechina. And the way they moved, the way they traveled, this was all Ashura Shechina, with the Migdash, with the Levium, and Moshe and Aaron, and the way it was broken up into the four groups. So the whole system was a system which emphasized one thing. The whole traveling, the whole way they traveled emphasized one thing, Ashura Shechina. But what Klal Yisrael failed to do was, they failed to appreciate what life is like with Ashura Shechina. That state they didn't appreciate. And because they didn't appreciate that state, so that's why they were unable to go and conquer the land. That's why, on the contrary, they were disappointed. They were unhappy, and they were disappointed. They allowed themselves to be disappointed. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said was that you didn't appreciate what the existence of what Ashura Shechina was. Now what you'll do is you'll come to realize what it means to live without Ashura Shechina. That's Tisha B'Av. And through the realization of what it's like to live without Ashura Shechina, through that way you'll come back to appreciate what Ashura Shechina is. It means to say that they took Ashura Shechina for granted. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu said basically. He says the psukim. What are the psukim really saying? What's the main idea in the psukim? Main idea in the psukim is you took it for granted. That's what it means. It means that the vamidbar shere isa shenu sochar Hashem olikecha vadavar zeh nicham vamidbar Hashem olikecha halulach lefnechem baderech lasu lechem makom lachanoschem ba'ish laila laroschem baderech. It means to say you took it for granted. You took it all for granted. There was no appreciation of Ashura Shechina. And that's why your judgment was based upon your own personal emotions. You were disappointed. It wasn't the way you thought it would be. You thought it would be easy. Now it's a tough battle. You had different ideas. Whatever it is, you went into a state of disappointment. But the reason why you're in this, you were disappointed for nothing. It was a bechiya shel chinam. Because in truth, you were living in the best condition. Now that you don't appreciate Ashura Shechina, throughout the generations, you'll come to realize what life is like without Ashura Shechina. And that really is the only route. That's why I mentioned that Kinnis is really the last, we mentioned this last year, the Navi said, that Kinnis is the last way to return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the last route back. Why is it the last route back? Because it demands that at least a person appreciates the negative as he studies. It's really a study in the state of the nation as it exists, withdrawn from God. Withdrawn from God. God withdrew himself from the nation. And therefore, in this state, a person, mechlala v'tashmehein. So the person will, from this state, he should come to recognize what it is to live with Ashura Shechina, with the security of Ashura Shechina, a different kind of a life. What it means, it's a different kind of life of for Beis Yisrael and also for Am Hashem. Now, there's one question that I think that we should take up. Actually, we answered it in part, but I think that there's a fuller answer. That is that an Avelis Hashanah is something that happened a long time ago. Avelis Hashanah, doesn't matter how long. Churban Bayis a long time ago. And while it's true, as I explained, the Churban really is an ongoing process because it's the state of Klal Yisrael as long as there is no Rosh Hashanah, and that's the way it is. But nevertheless, I would even say it's still tied to events that happened a very long time ago. It's still tied to the event of Churban Bayis. A question some people ask is that how could an event that occurred so long ago, still be important to us now? And aside from the answer that we gave that has to do with the, I understand that it's has to upon him and as I said, it's a current phenomenon. But it's even more, even the particular event that occurred, the particular events that occurred that are described by the Navi in terms of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, those events are real just like they happened yesterday. They didn't fade in time. Why didn't they fade in time? Why don't those events fade in time? That's an important question to answer. You see, an ordinary Avelis, it fades in time. That's it. And if it doesn't, then it's not normal and there's something wrong. What is the, why is it that in Avelis Hashanah, there's no such thing as a wearing away of the sensitivity? Sensitivity is always there just like it happened yesterday. Why is that so? I think the reason is very simple. The reason is, you see, if a person, let's say, in an Avelis Chadasha, whatever it is the person had is always because of, it's a circumstance, it's a particular, even a relative, it's a particular thing. When the thing is removed, so the emotions are affected right away, but then the person, an old person, will have to readjust, and they have to find new outlets for the emotion, to make up for where the emotion was going before, when that person was alive. That's good with regard to the world of particulars. But with regard to Hashgachas Hashem and Klal Yisrael, that is not something which is a particular. That's necessary. It's something which is necessary. See, something which is necessary, the loss today is just as bad as the first day. It doesn't make any difference. If a person doesn't have any food, so after a few days he'll get better, he'll forget about it. No, if you can't forget about it, on the contrary, it gets worse. The reason is because it's necessary. Something which is necessary, something which has to exist, the loss of that thing never diminishes with time. The concept of Tisha B'Av, one of the themes, one of the ideas in Tisha B'Av is that Hashra Shechina is not a luxury. It's not a luxury. Hashra Shechina is a necessity. That is the way it must be. The Klal Yisrael cannot live without it. The state of existence, for Beis Yisrael even, and certainly for Am Hashem, it's impossible. It's intolerable. It's unacceptable. So that's why the events that happened all those years ago will never fade and never lose their potency, because it's something which is necessary. It's not something which is a particular, which we can rearrange our emotions and channel it somewhere else. There's nowhere else to channel. This is a necessity. That's why you have the question we asked before, how is Nechama tied to, why is there always Nechama? Some kind of Nechama. It's in the background, it's in the shadows, it's one pasuk, but it's always there. Always there. Why? The reason is, because there's two kinds of Nechama. See, there's Nechama, which is Betoras Nechama. Nachmu, Nachmu, Ami. That's a real, that means that you should place yourself in the state of, of a different kind, you place your mind in a different kind of a state, a wonderful time. That's a real nechama. A person places himself in that state of mind, a wonderful time. If it's the future, whatever it is, but he allows his emotions to go into that kind of a framework where he feels that's what nechama really is. Nechama means, what is nechama velim? Nechama velim is some or other, to take the evil out of his tragedy and to redirect him, to give him a ray of hope, give him hope. Start the process of rechanneling. That kind of nechama is not the kind of nechama on Tisha B'Av. That's Shiva de Nechmasa. That's the nechama of the Navi. That follows Tisha. That's after Tisha B'Av. On Tisha B'Av there is no nechama. It's Ein Lo Menachem. There is no nechama. What it means is, but nevertheless, you still must have the idea of nechama. It's a nechama which is tied to the concept of Avelis, which means to say, it's just like, for instance, I give you an example, like you have in the on Pesach, so you have the Bracha Asher Golano. So you have the Bracha Asher Golano Golano. Then you say, Kein Ad Hashem Lakinei Yagiyinu L'Moedim V'L'Golim Acherim Aboyim L'Kraseinu L'Sarsom, and you talk about the Gula Asida. Why? Because it means to say that you can't, if you don't have a longing for the Asid, then you have no appreciation of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Because basically, the night of Pesach is the same. It has nothing to do with Gula Asida. It's really the theme is Yitzhak Mitzrayim. That's the mitzvah. So in the same way, you have to have a Seder about the Gula Asida. But it means to say the Gula Asida comes in because without the looking forward to the Gula Asida, then you don't appreciate Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It lacks any appreciation of the objective of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. The same thing over here. The reason why Nechama is always there is because of the fact that it's tied to the fact that the tragedy is a tragedy over something which is necessary. Necessary. It means Ashur Shechina is necessary. Since it's necessary, the loss always has to, as much as you think about the loss, you always have to think about the fact that it has to come back in the future because we can't exist without it. It's necessary. It's a Nechama b'teras avelus, a different kind of Nechama. It's not a regular kind of nechama. It's not a comforting where you comfort the gavra, where you make the person feel better. The person in Tisha B'Av, there's no place on Tisha B'Av for feeling good. That's not the day. The day is not feeling good. The day is a day of tragedy. It's not a day of nechama. But the nechama is really the nechama actually is insofar as the loss is a loss of something which is necessary. It means you cannot think of living without that necessary entity returning, that necessary situation returning. It's an impossibility. So therefore, you must always mention the fact that there will be a change and a change of events in which Christ will be reinstated, because we can't live without it. We can't live without it. It's a different kind of a nechama. It's a nechama which is based upon the necessary future events having to take place because the relationship between God and Klal Yisrael is not a particular, and it's not an option, and it's not a luxury. It's a necessity. So the tragedy is always tied with the impossibility of looking ahead even one moment without that necessity becoming realized. That's what I think the concept of that's what the concept of nechama here is. It's a different concept of nechama. It's a nechama mitoch avelus. Okay. Let me see if there's any other points. Yeah. We mentioned about the necessary existence. Interesting, Chazal say that Chazal say Yeshayo Chof Beis. It's where he talks about interesting. Has to be an interesting parak. So it has to do with Chorban Abayas. So he mentions that where the Navi criticizes Klal Yisrael. So he says, you take a look, yeah. That's, see the Pasuk, Yishechov Beis Pasuk Dalet, Alkeina Marti Shi'un Mini Amora Babechi, Alta Itzu Anachameni. Don't comfort me. I'll show basami, destruction of the people. Kiyom muhumo muvuso muvuchal at Hashem l'kin tzvakos begeichi zoyon. Geichi zoyon means in English. Makata kir v'sho elahar. And then he predicts the destruction. And he says, and he mentions, the Navi criticizes the people. And he says like this. He says, what did you do?
Chafez.
I was just reading Dalit. It's, Masa Gechi Zion. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
And now it says like this. He criticizes the people and he says, V'esbatei Yerushalayim Sefartim V'atissu Habatim Levater Achoma. So he talks about practical things they were doing to defend themselves. Okay, they were doing to defend themselves. He says, Nikva Asisem Bein Achoma Sayim Lamea Brecha Yeshana V'lo Hibatetem El Osera V'yotzra Me'rochok Lo Reisem. It's an interesting criticism. He says, what you did was, you strengthened the wall, you used your forces prowl, and in terms of your military tactics, you were operating, functioning properly. But there's one mistake. V'lo ibatatem elosea, you didn't look at the one who made it, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and, the Yotzra may rachok lo reisa, and you didn't see the one who created it from the distance. Now, you see, Rashi says, lo ibatem elosel. He says, then Tomer, if you're going to say, af chizkiyo asokain, shenema v'yishchazek v'yivin eskalachoma purtsa v'yalo amigdolim, he says, well, why are you criticizing the Jews for building up the walls to protect themselves? Chizkiyo did the same thing. So well, what's wrong? There's nothing wrong with protecting yourself. What kind of criticism is Yishayo Navi lodging against Klal Yisrael? It doesn't make any sense. So he answers and says, Chizkiyo Bar Hashem Elokei Yisrael Batach. Aval Atem Bimei Yehoyakim V'Tzidkiyo Lo Yibadetem Eloseha. Interesting criticism. So what does it mean? It means to say that that's basically what you have today. See, that's what you have today. It means the people were just looking for the security in terms of the physical might, physical cause. That proper military action and proper defense, having a proper defense is what we need. And Chazal said, yeah, it's true. Chazkiah also did it also. But the only difference was that he recognized one thing. What he recognized? He recognized Oseha, which is God, and he recognized Yotzro Me'rochok. What does it mean, Yotzro Me'rochok? So Rashi says, Me'oz Shebora Sa'olam, also Yerushalayim and Beis HaMikdash Machshava. From the time that God created the world, Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash was in his plans. And it's an interesting Radak. So Radak quotes, it's part of a Chazal. Radak quotes the whole Chazal. He says like this.
Zayin
Vara. Excuse me?
Zayin Vara.
What is it?
Zion, 3 lines down. Zion Dvarim.
Yes, that's right. K'marshom Razal. Shiva Dvarim Nivru Kodem Shinivra Olam. 7 things were created before the world was created. They Elohim. These are they. Gan Eden, Torah, Tzadikim, Yisrael, Kisei HaKavod, Yerushalayim, Mashiach Ben David. Now he says like this. He says, V'ein mashmos hadrash hazeh kemo shem mevinu oso hamon atalmidim. This is not what the Hamon, most of the students think, which is they imagine that these things were actually up there in the sky before God created it. Ela pirush sha'omdu b'koach libaros kodem shenivra olam. That when God created the universe, the potential for these things was guaranteed. Why? L'fish ha'dvorim ho'ela hein tachlis b'riyas olam. Okay. What does it mean? It means one thing. It means they're not possible existence, they're necessary existence. That's what it means. So that means to say that as long as that's the criticism of Yishayahu. Yeah, it's very good to defend the wall. You have to defend the wall. Chizkiyahu defend the wall also. Now without defending the wall, instead of sending the wolf, you're going to read Tillum, the whole city's going to fall down. You have to fight. You have to have a military force, and you have to fight properly. But there's only one thing. It only can work if you understand one thing. If you understand Oseha, if you understand your relationship with God, and if you understand that this is necessary existence. You're dealing with necessary existence. The Mikdash is necessary existence. If you don't have any concept of the Mikdash being necessary existence, so then it's going to fail. It's going to fail. There's no way without Ashgacha that the Ashgacha is a necessary phenomena. That's basically what Yeshayahu Navi told them. And it's like this. It's interesting. I'm going just a minute. Sidetrack a little bit. So, Zikar Hashem Alekim Tzvakos Bayomahu Lefchiyu Lemispei Ulekorcha Lachgor Sak. That's talking about Chobin Abayas. So God called on that day to Bechiyu Mispei and Korcha and Lachgor Sak. It means that's what it means. It means to say the Bechiyu and Mispei is why? it's the recognition of what life is like with the Siluk Ashgacha. Now he says, V'hinei sason v'simcha, horog bakar v'shachot tzon, ochal basar v'shasos yayin. And then comes the philosophy, ochal v'shaso ki machar namas. Interesting. So it says so the Navi says that the people didn't listen to this, but the people went into a different philosophy. That's heathen philosophy. That what? That Ochol is so a famous philosophy. Ochol v'shaso ki mocha namas. That doesn't say echol v'shaso. Ochol v'shaso. Because Ochol v'shaso means endless. Ochol is the infinitive. Shaso is the infinitive. By the Egel also the same thing. But it doesn't say that. It says, v'yakam om lechol v'shaso. It was it had the infinitive form there, so it means they wanted to an infinite involvement in Achilu Shia. That happens to be a major concept in philosophical psychology. You see, the person that avoids reality, the emotions get a person to avoid reality. But how do the emotions get a person to avoid reality? It gets the person to avoid reality by making him feel that the immediate is infinite. That the immediate is infinite. There's actually in Mishlei, the most powerful parak is with the Isha Zohar in Mishlei Zion. What is the Isha Zohar in Mishlei Zion? In Mishlei Zion, the Isha Zohar, how does she really entice the person? She entices the person with one thing. Entice the person by making it seem that the next few hours are an infinity. See? Right. Take a look. That is really the most powerful force of the Yetzer Hara. He says, Mishlei Zayin, and it says, right. This also ba'ahavim pasukin ches. You say the way she read through. You say the way she entices him is always these next few moments are an eternity, and then it says that's why it says Holech archaro pisom kishor al tevach yavo eches al musar avil adifalak chetz kvedo until a dart pierces his liver kamaya tzipor el pach, just like a bird is caught quickly in a snare. Lo yada kivenashavo. What it means that the reality is sudden. Reality is sudden because he was involved in an imaginative infinity. And the same thing over here. That's why it's Ochol v'shaso. Ochol v'shaso, the infinite.
Why do they mention ki machar nomas?
That's a good question. Ochol v'shaso ki machar nomas. Why do they say ki machar nomas? That's a good question. Why is that such an important part of the philosophy? As a matter of fact, if you take a look, At the next pasuk, it says, "V'nigla v'oznei Hashem tzvakos im yechupa ra'ovan azel lachem atmusan." That the pasuk says that this is the worst of era. And the Ram used this in Elchus Tshuva for Chil Hashem. But it says, "Im yechupa ra'ovan azel lachem atmusan." It means to say that it's basically there's no kapara. That's what it means. No kapara. It is the worst. This is the worst chait. Am Hashem tzvakos? Am Hashem lachem tzvakos? Is the worst chait? Okay. Now, why is this the worst chait? Actually, I think we said last year, we spoke about, or 2 years ago, Rabbi Ball reminded me, we spoke about the boros, the two boros, Shtaim Ros Asami, I'm sorry, Shtaim Ros Asami, right? Boros Nishborim, Hashem Yechil Amoyim. So he said that God says, look, if a person, even though he's metaphysically corrupt, but at least if he has a rational kind of way of life, is that something? It was a rational type of life. Also something. But V'ami Hamir Kvodo below Yoel. They went after nonsense. Not only did they enjoy the actual, the Chayashah they didn't enjoy, but they gave up the Chayashah for other nonsense. So it was the Shtayim Ros. So it seemed that if a person just involves himself in the Taiva, it's an Avera, but it's not the worst Avera in the world. And over here, the pasuk says, "V'nigla v'oznei Hashem tzvakos imichupar oven azor lechem atemuson omar Hashem lechem tzvakos." So Hashem Hashem twice over there. So it shows you well, this is like the most severe kind of a chait. Why is it such a severe chait? It's basically what kind of a philosophy is it? It's the materialism, okay? Hedonism. That's what it is. Hedonism. So take a look. It's interesting. It says, if you take a look at the rest of the perek, a little further than the perek, it says, "Skom Hashem alakim svakos, leich bo ala sochin hazeh al shevna asher ala boyas." Okay? Malachofo milachofo ki chotzafto lacho po cover. See now, Shevna Sofer, he was the one that was on the, was a point in time of Chizkiyahu. And what happened was that when they attacked him, when the Assyrians attacked him, so he wanted to make peace with Melech Ashur. He wanted to make peace. That was his idea, was to make peace. And he was a politician. Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu said no. They were not going to. And he went out himself and he shot a dart. He shot an arrow. And on the arrow he said that the Jews really want to make peace with you. And what happened was later, that Chizkiyahu and Yeshayahu, what happened was he went out Rav Shake, if I'm not mistaken, so he went out to meet him, and what happened was that as he left, they closed the gate, and then Rav Shake said, "I thought you said everybody wants to make peace with me." So they said, "No, they changed their minds, they're not doing it," so they killed him. But anyways, the Gemara is Sanhedrin. But the pasuk over here says that the pasuk says, "Lech bo lasochein hazeh al shevna asher al abayas." Malachofo umilachofo ki chasavto lecho po kovar. Chotzvi moron kivro chokiki baselam mishkanlo. And the pasuk says, who are you that you made a grave for yourself? You made a grave in this spot, and he made a grave, Rashi says, among the kivre beis David, to be buried among the kings. Okay? So he says, so who are you to think that you can have a grave over there? Okay? What kind of a criticism is this? Like, very cryptic. Like, what does it mean? This is a criticism? But who cares about his grave? What do you care about his grave? But the answer is like this. The answer is, it's tied to the to before. That's why the parak is tied together. What it means is that a person has to handle the energies. A person cannot live for the moment, because the energy can't be consumed in the moment. He's always thinking about the future. What's going to happen? What's going to be? There's a lot of energy left over for the future. Now, there are several ways to get rid of this energy. One way is the way Shevna got rid of it. He was a politician, and politicians always are interested in what their name is going to be for posterity. So he wanted a grave in a nice place. His fantasy of immortality was wrapped up in his where he's going to be buried and what the place he's going to have in history and the nice name he's going to have for himself. That's a political, that was the politician. And he was a politician. He wanted to make peace with Sennacherib. So that was his chait. His chait was that his motivations were based on not upon the reality, the best reality for Klal Yisrael, not upon an assessment and evaluation of Ashur HaShechina, but upon his own political powers. What kind of a name will he have as a politician? That was Shevna. But the other philosophy, Ochol V'Shoso Ki Mochar Nomos, the hedonism, what the Navi shows you about hedonism is that's also based on the fantasy of immortality. But it's based on the negative of the fantasy of immortality. It's the energy, it's a displacement. In other words, the energy that goes into the fantasy of immortality is being redirected towards the Ochol V'Shoso. See, that's the hedonistic philosophy. The Navi really shows you what's at the root of that philosophy. Ochol V'Shoso Ki Machar Nomos is not simply a philosophy of taiva. There's no such thing as a rational philosophy of taiva. Rational philosophy of taiva will lead a person to depression because it's impossible for him to really realistically live in a way that his energies are consumed. It's just impossible for man. There's no such phenomena. That's why there can never be a rational philosophy of taiva. It's impossible. So Ochol V'Shoso Ki Machar Nomos means we're going to die anyways. So let's take that energy and let's get involved in infinite achilusi and infinite taiva. The person, the heathen who is involving himself in taiva now is really doing it because what he is doing actually is trying to partake of the infinite, but he knows there is no such thing in the future. So he's trying to take that infinite and put it into the present of achilusi. You understand what I mean?
Yeah. Is there an immortality satisfaction?
What he's doing is displacement. It's displacement of the enjoyment of the infinite onto the present taiva. You understand what I mean? It's a funny kind of displacement, but that's the way it works. Whereas the person really wants
immortality.
He can't have it, so that energy is going to be used in infinite involvement in Achilus Shia. That's his immortality. The energy is being displaced. I'll give you an example. It's a false idea, but it's an idea that in a small way, people even have today. I'll give you an example. Like people will say, well, look, our time's running out. We're getting older. We have to enjoy ourselves. So we have to go here. We have to go there. You know, we have to go do things. We have to go on trips. You see people get older. We have to go on trips because we're going to die. What does it mean? Kimachanamos. That's what it means. So it means like this. It means the person perceives life as simply as it's a big box, and you just store things in there. So you went on a trip, put that in the box. Went on another, you did this, put that in the box too. It's a big place where you can store all your little enjoyments in there. Of course, there's no such phenomena. It's not true. It doesn't exist. The person had an enjoyment, it's gone now. Right now it makes no difference whether he had that enjoyment or didn't have that enjoyment. All there is the now. So the person really thinks that he has some kind of a way of storing these enjoyable moments, and every enjoyable moment is something. That is a fantasy. The Ochol V'Shoso Ki Machar Nomos is also on the same wavelength, the same kind of a phenomena. An infinite will involve ourselves in infinite Achilus Shia. This will be our thing that we have. That's what we have. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
What do we have? We have something. We have the endless Ochol V'Shoso. You see? It's a trick of the mind. It's a trick of the mind. That's what the Navi really... that's why the Navi says, Ochol V'Shoso.
It's like I stored up all these life experiences. Same thing.
That same thing. Same exact thing.
Yeah.
Storing up.
That is his...
link to the infinite is through there. See? His link to the infinite is through there. Person knows he's going to die. Yeah, but we're having all these pleasures. It's as if those pleasures are infinitely with you. You have them. Well, he had a good life. Well, the man had a very good life. The problem is with the word had. That's the only thing. The fact that it was had means it does not exist anymore. You see?
Had all that.
But people think that he really has a possession. It's in his possession. He's got it. He's gone, but he's got it. He had it. You see? It's an interesting illusion, but that's the illusion of pretty common illusion. That's what another points out. That's why the politician, that's why he compares Shevna, it's just a different expression. Of course, the politician is really thinking in terms of his place in history, his grave, his fame, which is something, of course, another fantasy which doesn't exist. But there's a way to take that fantasy and to displace it into the press of Achol HaShoso.
Uh-huh.
See, that's why this sin can never be forgiven until Misa. Because it means the moment the person takes that other energy, which is from the fantasy of immortality, and what he does is he uses that as fuel for Taiva, then that's it. There's no more. That's it. Then the only thing is Misa.
Why do they consider Chil Hashem?
That's a good question. My Chazal would say it's Chil Hashem. I guess it's Chil Hashem. I guess why that is Chil Hashem?
Radak says that.
Oh, excuse me?
Radak says that.
Yeah, Radak says Chil Hashem. Chazal says Chil Hashem. That's a good question. Why the plain shot in the pasuk is not Chil Hashem? Plain shot in the pasuk is that this kind of a sin, there's only one cure. That's Misa. Because there's no way out of it. It means the man's energy is being totally channeled into Achol HaShoso. So he's just simply a goof. So the only thing that can happen to him is he dies. There's no other way to save him. That's it. There's nothing to save. So that's the plain shot. But you're right. This philosophy apparently is the worst Chil Hashem. It's even worse than Shevna. Even worse than Shevna's philosophy. Shevna's philosophy is tolerable. Yeah, it's a fantasy, but it's somehow or other. It's not considered that it defies Kapara. This one defies Kapara. This one defies Kapara. That's a good question. I don't know why. I mean, why that should be the greatest? I guess the greatest Chil Hashem, because it is really the only thing I could think of. I would say is that it is taking the lowest element of man and raising it into a philosophy. It's taking the lowest element of man and raising it into a philosophy. That's the greatest Chil Hashem. See, you have to understand in general what is evil. People always talk about evil. You know, they talk about it readily as if they know what it is. But when you ask people what evil is, they're usually at a loss at explaining it. What's the difference? How would you define evil? Where does it come from? What is its root? And what exactly is it? What is evil? Evil, I would say like this, that evil is taking a neurotic trend in man and making it into a philosophy. That's evil. Okay? A person has mishigas, and he has crazy emotions. A person has a choice. Either he can recognize the neuroses, or else he can take the neuroses and make it into a philosophy.
Like a reality.
That's evil. Now, over here, what the person is doing is he's taking a neurotic trend for immortality, which is universal neuroses. I don't mean specific neuroses. I mean, specific neuroses the psychologists talk about. I thought Torah talks more about universal neuroses. So the person takes this neurotic trend, and what he does is he uses it as to create a philosophy, a philosophy of Taiva. So that is evil. That's the reduction of man. I guess the biggest Chil Hashem is the reduction of man to a nefesh abami, and that's basically what it is. The person wants covered adam. You see, maybe a fantasy, but the fact is it's not something which is a denial of a higher element of man. As a matter of fact, covered is usually tied to some kind of a higher element. That's why if a person basically learns in order of lo lishma. Okay, so it's lo lishma, but it's not chayav misa. Why? Because there is some recognition of a higher element. Why is he learning? He's learning because it's a good. People will recognize me. But what are they recognizing? They're recognizing the good. So he still is in line with the good. But if a person the person converts all his energy to Nefesh Abahami, then there's a total denial of Adam. So that is the worst of error. That's Chil Hashem. Chil Hashem really means where your life is such that it doesn't reflect God anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, now, let's see, just hold on a moment. Oh, you have to, how do you get into this?
Try to remember. How do we do it? Oh, wait, did you see the Rashi over there?
Necessary existence of Rishina, of the Rishina.
Which Rashi?
Necessary existence of Rishina. The Razak we did, the previous one.
What is it actually?
We got to this because of the previous concept.
Oh, he says it's because of rejection of Shechina.
That the seven things are created with the world. That it's a necessity.
Speak up, I can't hear.
He got to this from the previous pasuk, where the Radak mentions that at the creation of the world, these seven things were made because they're necessary existences.
Right.
Did the next pasuk also.
Which was that?
Yeah, he said it was
fun. What about before? What was the way?
Yeah.
He's saying that Yerushalayim is a...
Yeah, he's saying different. He learned it... He says a chil Hashem because what they're doing is they're denying the reality of God. It means denial of reality. Denial of reality of God. Yeah, that's good. It's good sound. It's good sound also. Okay. Let me see. Just give me 1 minute over here. Back to Rambam. Okay. Brought a very sad story there. And the Chazal say that's why it says Al-Eilani Bachia. When he said Al-Eilani Bachia, he's referring to that story. Yirmiyahu HaNavi. It was, second.
What number is it? Page 34 in the ancient
Arabic. Page what?
34 in the old,
No, I'm going to go. Give me
the new one. Yeah, 262 in the Oscar.
It's what?
262 in the
Oscar. Yeah, but we need to
the one that I have is what? What?
129.
49? 129. 129. Yes, that's it. That's okay. See, yeah. Right.
Oh, is that the one where they almost married each other?
That's right.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. Yeah. What was the story? The story was that...
they were taken away... Was that
the Gemara Gittin? Yeah, the
Gemara Gittin. Yeah.
They were taken captive, and they felt the two masters were neighbors, living opposite each other. And they related to one another about their captives. They wanted to have a maidservant that's dressed in scarlet and nice features, and the other one said that, I also have a captive. A male, slave. And then he said, let's pair them together and share their offspring. That's where Bolin is Avgim v'nachalko b'nosayim. Okay, and then the Vlados. And they agreed. And they put them into one room. And it says they cried all night. And then in the morning... each one cried. One said, how can I, a descendant of Aaron, defile myself with a female slave? And she said, that how can I, an offspring of Yocheved, be wedded to a slave? So then it says, then in the morning broke, they recognized each other. So they saw that they were brother and sister, and they rushed into each other's arms and became united together, and then they died. Yatzar Nishmasam Benishima. You see? What it means is, like this, that each one was living through a personal tragedy. But then when they saw each other, there was a full realization and objectification of the tragedy. What they saw, you see, when a person sees another individual sees the tragedy, so it gives it more reality. And the full realization of the tragedy caused their death. They died. It means to say it's that Al-Ela Ani Bachia. So So Bechi means, real Bechi is when there's nothing more that a person can do. That's it. He's like overwhelmed by the tragedy. There's nothing more he could say, nothing more he could do. That's Bechi. That's Bechi. Bechi means it's the last stage. There's nothing to talk about, nothing to verbalize. Can't verbalize. Bechi is if the verbalization. It means that that's it. So, and Navi defines, that's what it means, Alelani Bechia. It's interesting that the Navi does take individual, and it does take individual cases, an individual case. But as I said before, the individual case is really, is a reflection of the entire state of the Am, the entire state of the nation. So, so getting back to this, how do we get into this again? What was the point? That was Maglam. Is that that's it? It's all over. There's nothing more. It's all over, and there's no future. That was the Bechir Rav. That was the Maglam. And you raised a question with regard to that. You wanted this question about that.
No, I have no question.
Oh. Yeah, it's an interesting thing about the Maglam. I mean, it's the side point about the. Maraglan, because the thing was that they didn't have any courage to fight. So apparently they thought that Kamp Yitzhak would be an easy battle. They didn't expect this confrontation. They didn't expect such a powerful confrontation. Bnei Anak Reinisham. And the Nephilim are, the interesting thing about the Nephilim, what were these Nephilim, these giants? What were these giants? It sounds very strange reading the Torah about these giants. But, I think the Pshat is in, I believe Ramban really says that pshat in Bereshis. The pshat is, you have to understand that in the old days, people weren't just stupid. I mean, they were intelligent people, but it was a different kind of a framework. It's very hard for modern man to understand how they thought, because they lived in a different kind of a framework. But in those times, physical appearance was a strength. Was extremely important. In today's society, it's not that important. But in those days, it was extremely important. And what they did was, I believe it's Pshat in the Pasuk, and Afilu Mahayu Baretz Bayom Lahim, V'gam Achreichin, Asher Yavo B'nei Olohim O'B'nei So Adam V'yoldu Lahem, Heimah Agiborim Hashem Me'olam Anshe Hashem, the Pasuk in, what do you call it, in Bereshis. What it means is that they realized, apparently, that if two people that are very tall and strong live together, mate, so then the offspring is taller, and this way you reach genetically to the maximum of the species. So since that was a very important thing, what they did was they bred, they interbred the tall, powerful people. And they apparently reached the maximum size that's possible for man. And this was, these people were like, they were like, what do you call it? They were treated like royalty. It was a royalty of physical, power. That was the Bnei Anak. Bnei Anak Menan Afilam. So when they saw those people, they would have very formidable appearance naturally. And very powerful people. And, they're very methodical about it. That was the way that's what they planned to do, and that's what they did. They worked it out. So, man's essence became his physical, stature. So, they expected an easy battle, and, it wasn't an easy battle, so they were disappointed. But they didn't have the courage to go fight. But the question, of course, is like, why didn't they have the courage? So the Ibn Ezra says they didn't have the courage because they were slaves, and slaves were put down emotionally, and they weren't able to rise above that. What gave them the ability to escape Mitzrayim was the fact that they saw that they're superior intellectually to the Egyptians. So that really was a certain kind of self-esteem that they got from Moshe Rabbeinu from Torah that allowed them to defy the Egyptians in a certain way. But when it came to conquest, they weren't able to overcome their emotions. The fear. Fear is a powerful, devastating force in man. Devastating emotion. They couldn't overcome that devastating emotion. But what were they? How are they expected to do it? How are they expected to do it? It sounds funny when you read about the Meraglim. So the Ramban says the chait was that they were afraid. Yeah, it's a very hard thing. You take a person that's a fearful person by nature, and you put him up in battle against a giant. He can't do it. He just, he's emotionally, he's unable to cope. So, on the surface, it seems like they were obligated to redo their personalities. I mean, it seems like a very hard task, a difficult task to demand of a person. But the truth of the matter is that there are two kinds of courage, really, that a person has. There's one kind of courage that is based upon a person's emotions. You see, the average courageous person. The average courageous person is courageous because he gets one emotion against the other. He always, he summons up the other side of his personality. He says, I'll defeat him. I'll defeat him. It's a certain inner strength, an inner emotional strength. Some people have that kind of a character. I was visiting in Campobello Island, you know, where FDR was. So, yeah, you have different things about him, you know, about his personal life. And you could see the man was definitely what you would call a very courageous person. I mean, at the age of 39, he lost the use of his legs, and he was relegated to a wheelchair, but it never stopped him. But not only that, it's an interesting thing. His son said about him, he said, "I'll never forget the look on my father's face when he found out that he had polio." He said he smiled and he said, "I'll lick it." So that's a certain kind of personality. Certain kind of courageous personality. That's what people today, you know, consider courageous. But that kind of courage is an emotional thing in a person. So very few people have it. People respect it. Most people don't have it. Most people cave under and they can't do it. Question, of course, is what happens to an average person? Be defeated the rest of his life. Just spend the morning. But people that are that have that inner strength are able to overcome it. But that kind of courage, you see, always stems from another emotion. See, it always stems from another emotion. The other emotion is it's because you summon up another emotion. That kind of courage is what we call heroics. It's heroics. I'll tell you why it's heroics, because you see, a hero is never alone. A hero always has an audience. The thing is, the hero's audience doesn't have to necessarily be a real audience. It could be an audience in the back of his mind. Like if a person is in battle and he feels frightened, so he'll summon up certain thoughts in his mind. He'll say, "Well, look, I can." If he says that I can beat him, or he thinks about how people would look at him if he's successful. See, in the back of his mind, there's always an audience there in heroics. But there's another kind of courage, which is real courage, where the person is alone, really, where the person is just guided by reality itself. That's a different kind of courage. That kind of courage is no audience. That kind of courage, a person is just guided by the reality of the situation. Apparently, what the Torah demanded of these people was that they should reach that level of courage. That kind of courage. That kind of courage is based upon the recognition. Intellectual recognition of Ashura Shechina. It's a different kind of reality. It's sure a person is a slave and they don't have that kind of emotions, so they can't overcome those. They can't change their personality. That's their personality. But in terms of the knowledge is something which a person can always attach themselves to if they have the opportunity to gain the knowledge. That was really the chedim of the Meraglim, that they couldn't partake of true courage. See, not that they couldn't change their personalities. Changing personality is something which that's it. So it's based upon the way the person was raised, and there's not that much that a person can do about it. But the courage that comes from knowledge is a different kind of courage. That's something that a person, through an increase in knowledge, can gain. That's not based upon the emotional kind of courage. Different kind of courage. That's really what the demand was for the Meraglim. Not that they should change their personality, but that they should be able to come to courage through a recognition of the fact, the existence of Ashur Ashkina. It's a different kind of a thing. But they were grappling with the other kind of courage, and they couldn't do it. That's why they failed. That's why they fell apart.
Well, they had a resistance to the whole system anyhow.
Well, that's something else. That's Rashi's chat. That's not the Rabban.
I know, but
that's right.
Rashi would explain why they couldn't have the rational courage.
I'm just going like the Ramban. Ramban just not explain pshat. They just what does the pasuk say? The pasuk describes what an effect it had on them, like a devastating effect. Does this be a Maslavenu? Yeah, that's right. That means emotion. Emotions, they melted like water. Just melted down, like that's it. The meltdown was the loss of, they didn't have the other kind of courage. They couldn't do it, they didn't have it. That's something which is a rare thing, and something which is based upon the person's emotions. They melted. They weren't able to. They were devastated.
Really?
But the only thing that could save them was the knowledge. Yes.
Is that the reason why they listed the size of Ov's bed in the Chorish? You know how wide it was and how long it was?
Yeah.
That's the same purpose?
The size of his bed. To show. Yeah, what Moshe Rabbeinu always shows. V'yeti Sichom and Og, and they were the giants. Hine Arso Eres Barzo. Right. Aloy Barabbas B'Diamo. Gigantic person, and yet we defeated him. To show that it was because of the Ashur Ashkina. It was the knowledge that defeated him, not because of the right. It wasn't a fear because of his physical stature. Yeah. So that was the problem. But at any rate. There are other things also. I mean, you're right. There are other factors also. But I'm just zeroing in on this factor of courage.
Right.
That was a factor as well. Yeah. The one thing that I would just like to mention, and that is, it's tied into what we said before. There's nothing new tied into what we said before. But I think it's an important point. With all the kinnis really show you one thing. It shows you one thing. These points are very interconnected. You can't really deal with one without the other. But the idea of kinnis, and it gets back to what I mentioned before about the way the world today views it, that the idea of kinnis is tied to this kind of a knowledge. You see, because the events are devastating. A person reads the events in the kinnis, it really makes the person fall apart. And the natural reaction is to abandonment, you know, despair. And that's it. Say, it could lead a person to, led a lot of people to less dying. But actually, it shows you one thing. The kinnis show you one thing. It shows you that the kinnis are based on the most powerful type of amuna. And it's the reason why that amuna is so powerful, it means to say that no matter how bad the tragedies, it never reflects in any way, never brings a question to the person's mind about the existence of God and about God's Ashgacha. Which means to say that the knowledge of God's existence and God's Ashgacha is completely from another source other than the being the beneficiary of God's goodness. It means it has to be based purely on a knowledge of God's existence and God's Ashgacha. And that's why a person can say kinnis. If it's not based on that, if a person's emuna is based upon him being the beneficiary of God's goodness, then of course the whole thing falls apart. That's it. You read through a few kinnis and you can forget everything. but the kinnis shows you that the fundamental, the only way a person can say kinnis really is if his yediyas Hashem and his emuna and his concept of God's hashgacha is based upon a completely different source than the experiential, than his experiencing the good life. It's a completely different source. What is that source? That source is knowledge. And without that, the kinnis are really devastating. The kinnis really show you, the kinnis is really something that is a barometer really of a person's emunah. It's based on the most powerful emunah. Otherwise you can't have kinnis.
Ready?
In today's world, the kinnis are really, the type of things you hear today is based on the whole relationship with God is based upon the idea of them having a certain kind of life that they desire. That's why the kinnis are totally corrupted. Yeah.
Hey.
Yes.
The idea that you were saying is in the kinnis, when the Rishayim took over the kalim of the Beis Hamikdash, that was their line. You know, they kept on asking, "Where's the owner of these kalim? How come he doesn't stop me?"
That's right, exactly.
In your kinnis in Kuf Lamed.
Yeah.
On page Kuf Lamed. When they took the Shulchanas. Yeah?
Right.
And I think you said Pshat a few years ago about when, I think it was Titus who screamed in the Beis Hamikdash.
Right.
Now, where is your God now? That's the idea that you're...
That's right.
Yeah?
That's the idea, exactly. That's the idea, yeah. That's it.
In other words, you have to understand the opposite idea to understand this idea, is that...
That's right. That's right. That's right. But the main idea, I think that I didn't mention before, I mean, the main idea is that the whole, to sum up the whole kinnis is really, I mean, that's why what I mentioned before was it's a funny kind of study. It's a study that's tied with a bitterness. It's a study of the God's withdrawal of his hashgacha. And a person never stops studying, even though it's the most tragic event, the only way that he could relate back to God is through studying that itself, through studying that process itself. So the process is one in which the person studies the process, but it has a very powerful effect on his emotions. So it's a combination. It's an emotional kind of a thing, but it's guided by study of certain facts. But it culminates in the realization. That's why it says, "Kol a person that's misabel in Yerushalayim is zocha v'roa ben hachamasa." It means a person that realizes what it means not to have the ashgacha. What the tragedy of the absence of the Ashgacha is, and he realizes the necessity of the Ashgacha, so then he's ready for Binyan Yerushalayim. That's really what the kinnis is.
Did I ask a question about that?
Yeah.
Why, when they had the Ashgacha Shechina, they took it for granted. Now we're missing it, so we realize what we've lost. Now why is it that when Mir Tzashem we regain it, it's going to be any different? Why won't we take it for granted all over again?
Well, that's the concept. The concept is that once the nation goes through this experience, and they go through the experience of Tisha B'Av, then they'll have the true realization of what it is to live without the Ashgacha. Then they'll be able to appreciate the Ashgacha. They won't take it for granted. That's precisely it. That's what it means. Atam b'chisam b'chiyah shel l'chinam, b'aniyek v'edah b'chiyah udaras. You didn't have the appreciation, took it for granted. Now, through the Bechila Doros, you won't take it for granted again, so then when the Binyan Bayis Shlishi, it will take place, so then they won't take it for granted. That's precisely the process. So really, in the downfall, is really the, in the downfall, in the Bechi, and in the Hesped, in the Kinas, is really the seed of the return of the Shechina. That's precisely why.
Right?
Yeah.
Vayikonein Yirmiyahu.
Yeah.
That the Churban was delayed, I think it said 22 years, because they did kinos for Yoshiyahu. I mean, they had a proper realization, so it allowed the...
you mean because of the Kiddush for Yoshio, that's what was postponed, you mean?
Yeah.
Which kid is it?
Yeah.
Because of that. That's good. That's very good. That's very good. That's very good. I mean, because of the realization of the breach in the Ashgacha, that was enough to hold it off. That's good shot. That's very good. That's good shot. It wasn't the full destruction yet, but it was just the breakdown. It was a breakdown. It was a partial, like a partial... devastation. Yep. All right, so those are basically the elements, I think. All right. Anything else? Any other questions? Let me just see if I have every point.
Rebbe?
Yes.
Yeah, we came across a very somewhat of a strange thing in the Rambam's letter to Tamar.
Yeah.
He says, V'hishanu al eila ha-psukim ha-mitiyim atem achenu. Velo yapchidchem tmidus hashmados v'sigbores yidei soneinu v'chulshas umaseinu shizakulo lenasos uletaya ashalo yachziku b'das rak hachasidim yirei Hashem yizera Yaakov hazera hatohar v'hanaki asher nemar aleihem uvasridim asher Hashem korei.
Wow. Unbelievable.
That's unbelievable, huh?
He means it's a cleansing process.
Yep. Purification.
And he tells it to them that they shouldn't, don't get too frightened.
Wow. Unbelievable.
How are you going to... He goes further.
Yeah.
He says, Uveir Shehem Achadim, Veheim HaNashim Asher Amdu Avosam Al Har Sinai, Veshamo Hadibor Piagvura, Veherimu Yaminam Lebris Hashem, V'kiblu atzvam lasos v'lishmoa v'amru nasa v'nishma. V'kiblu aleyem v'alaboyim achareyem k'mo sh'amru lanu v'neinu ad olam. U'kfar arav lanu Hashem yisbarach. V'day bo arev. V'hodiyanu sh'kol mi sh'amad v'maymet hartzinai yamina v'moshe rabbeinu v'chol ma sh'amar. Heim uvneyem uvney v'neyem ad sof kol adoros. V'amru yisala hine anochi boi lecha bav anan v'avu yishma amadabri yimach v'gam b'chol yamina l'olam. L'chach yivada, shekol mi sheyatza mehadas hanesuna b'maymer hazeh, she'eno mizera anashim ahem. V'chein amur avoseinu, al kol amestapik v'toris Moshe, lo amdu avosav al har Sinai. Yishmereo Hashem v'yishmarcha min asafek, v'yachik ma'aleinu ma'aleichem hashibush v'machshavos ha'mavios eilav v'machshilos bo. And then, of course, the next paragraph he tells him that's why you should make sure you're involved in Torah.
And what? In Maimon HaSinai?
Yeah, you make sure you know the idea of Yichud Hashem, Maimon HaSinai, you know, those kind of things. So this way, you're part of the right side of the cleansing process.
Mm-hmm.
But how do
you... Well, you mean, then you're Vosavor and HaSinai.
Then you're Vosavor, right. It's a retroactive presence.
They come in and out of our Sinai.
It's up to you whether they were there or not.
That's quite interesting.
It is an interesting round. It is an interesting round. That's a tough one. It's hard to understand that.
The previous paragraph,
yeah.
He quotes the Pesukim.
Yeah.
He says, "Ukfar arav lanu Hashem yisal al yidei neviyav, shelo novad velo nichla, velo nechtal miot uma chashuva ma'ula. Ukmo she'i efshar bitol metzias habori yisala, kein lo yitochein aveda seinu min ha'ola." Amar, Kiani Hashem lo shanisi, v'atem b'nei Yaakov lo chalisa. V'chein bisrano v'fichano yisal shmo, ki min ha'nimna etzlo shiyimaz banu kulanu. V'apal pi shenamra es piv, v'navor al mitzvosav, Amar, komar Hashem, im yimadu shemaya milmala, v'yichokru mostei eretz lamata, gam ani emas b'chol zer Yisrael, al asher osu, nu'um Hashem. Uvazeh atzmo hikdim lo diyeno v'torah de Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom omar v'afkam zos b'yosem b'eretz eveyam lo ma'astim v'lo ga'altim l'chalosam v'hafer b'risi itam v'gomer. And then he says, you know, to rely on those psukim and not to be afraid about any tragedies or any destruction.
Right.
Because it's all l'nasos l'taya.
Right. That's very good. Yeah. That's very nice. That's in the Gersh Tema there.
Yes.
Yeah. It means that it's a logical thing. That's what it means. It means that it can't be emotions. It can't be... That's simply a logical... It's a piece of knowledge. It's a piece of knowledge. That's right. That piece of knowledge is what the whole canon is based on. Because without that piece of knowledge, canon just leads you to... leads the person to kfirah. That's exactly. That's right. That's good.
What does he mean by... So what's the lo yabchidchem? You mean you shouldn't be...
And it shouldn't affect you.
What?
Shouldn't affect... In other words, the fact, like, let's say, for instance, a person goes through the kinnis, and he reads all the tragedies, and he has to read through the tragedies, and he has to feel the effects and everything, but the fact is, it does not lead him to any conclusion. It should not lead him to the conclusion that there's less than less dying, that there's no relationship between God and the Klal Yisrael anymore.
You mean, so then the logical conclusion is, it's l'nasas l'taya.
Right. That's the logic, right. Logic is it has to be, and it's impossible otherwise, and there has to be such a thing, and regardless of the events, that particular fact that God always relates to Klal Yisrael exists. But of course, it's a different kind of relationship. It's a relationship without a Ashur Ashkina.
Right.
Very tenuous. I mean, people don't, there's no security, there's no safety anymore, there's no guarantee anymore. But he says it'll never cease to exist.
Yeah. Well, explain it, because next time...
Well, you're saying that's a different kind of Ashgach you have now. The Ashgach now is that it won't be L'chalosim. That's it. That's the only Ashgach. The Ashgach before Yishavtim was L'fetach, that's with Ashur HaShchina. But after Siluk Shchina, after what do you call it, Hester Panem, it still is a relationship. What's the relationship? The relationship boils down to one thing. That it will not be clear. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Total destruction. Never be total destruction of Israel. That's the only thing we have now. That's what we're living under now. That defines precisely the Ashgach of Hester Panem. But which group will be destroyed, what will happen to which people, or where? There's no security about that. It doesn't exist anymore. That exists in the time of Mikdash, does not exist today.
No, but according to him, if it's Linat Sosotayer,
yeah,
then it has to only leave people who are perfected in knowledge.
That's correct. But it still doesn't mean that there's a guarantee for the other people.
Right.
No particular. Doesn't mean that if a person is a good person, he's going to make it.
No, right, correct.
That's the end objective of the whole thing. That's what he's saying. The end objective in general is that's going to be Nasal Atar.
Uh-huh.
It will result, let's put it this way, it will result in the highest, most purest form of Mona. That's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Among those people that are left in the end.
Ready? You mentioned about the universal aspect of the Avelis of Tisha B'Av. Is there a point to be made that we really do it all year round in terms of any Simcha or any Avelis we say?
That's right.
That the idea being that any state of extreme emotion, we should carry this with it.
That's right. It means like this, that there's really, that this state that we live in is never to be forgotten. It's true that there's one day that is designated towards a total involvement and understanding and realization of the state with all its bitterness and all its sadness, but it means all year round also that you can never forget that state. That's why you have all these things, Zech L'Chorban. You can never be a loss of awareness of that. And that's why by Chasna, by Simcha, there always has to be something.
Or even if they stumble.
Because anytime, otherwise the person will lose that that realization.
Even in a base level, too, on the other extreme.
Even
in a base level, in the other extreme. You
right.
Say, Yushalav, Yushalayim, Tiyav Yushalayim.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
At the top of the
shir,
I asked you, about the
Mitzach Sofram. Yeah, Mitzach Sofram, that's right. Let me answer like this. So the answer is that there are two, that Torah was given all over Shvuah. So there are really two states of Kabbalah Satara. One Kabbalah Satara is for the Actually, you know, the pasuk reminds the pasuk. Tachas shelo avadatem asod Hashem lekechem besimcha v'tuv leivav meirov kol. What does that mean? What does it mean? It means what we said before. It means because you took it for granted. That's what it means. You took the hashgacha for granted, and you weren't over the simcha v'tuv leivav meirov kol. You did not appreciate the hashra shchina. So that's why the other side is the tochacha. Where Klal Yisrael lives through tragic times, so it means that the Kabbalah Torah was for two possible ways that you live in the Torah. One way is b'simcha v'tov leivav, and the other way is the ba'ala. And that's why he holds that when you make the bracha, that's why Masechet Sefer says we make the bracha for Kabbalah Torah. Now it's a Kabbalah Torah for the other side, for the removal of the hashgacha and for all the onshin. And so that's why I have to make a bracha of Dynamis. So that's what it means by the Tachla. It means that Klal Yisrael cannot be a nation that is left a chance. There's no chance. Either they will be on the highest level, or else in the best circumstances, or else horrible circumstances. That was Kabbalah Star B'Ola B'Shua. So now, so Tisha B'Av reflects Ola B'Shua. Reflects Ola.
Rebbe?
Yeah.
What would be the difference between the actual Zvan of Tisha B'Av when the Chorban existed and now, in terms of Hashgacha?
What?
The difference between the actual Zvan of the Chorban, the actual day when it took place, or the day that took place, and now. In both cases, you're saying is the Hester Punim.
Yeah, well, there's one thing. In the transition process, that was direct. Because it's Bila Hashem Velo Chamal. It means the Hester Punim is the state that results after the destruction.
Which is worse?
What?
Which one is worse?
Which one is worse? It's hard to say. I mean, one is an event, a one-time event that removed something, and the other one is the state that results afterwards. I mean, it's a constant thing. I don't know if you could draw the line between those two things. And that there's no Ashur Ashkina. That's it.
That's right?
Yeah.
It was destroyed. They had the Shabbat.
Right.
And then when it was...
Yom Simcha.
That was Yom
Simcha. It's Yom Simcha because at that point they can recognize they can appreciate the...
That's very good. That's why that explains it. That's right.
That's why it's a moed.
That's right. That's very good.
What? Oh, right.
Rajiv?
Yes.
I just want to know if the idea of the failure to appreciate the Ashur Shechina as reflected in today's Kriya. Kisol Zvanim Avei Banim.
Right.
No Shantem Baret.
Right.
Vyasis and Petal. That's the same idea of No Shantem Baret. That they, out of comfort, state of being in the land for a long time and achieving security, so they fail. They take for granted the.
They take for granted.
Ashur Shechina, that's the same idea.
That could very well be. I didn't really look into it, but I hear what you're saying. I didn't look into it.
Okay. I just thought...
No, I hear what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense. I just didn't get a chance to look through. I didn't get a chance to look at the psukim and examine that framework. But I hear what you're saying. Nashantan Bards. I take it for granted.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought of it when you brought the idea of, taking...
taking our first shina for granted.
For granted, right. I just thought
of the assumption. That makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
That's sort of like the plain shot almost.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like when you read it.
It sounds like that's the plain shot in the puzzle.
Right.
Yeah.
But then, of course, it's a deeper idea.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. That's good.
Okay. Thank you,
Mike. Rebbe, can we ask you a halakha question?
I just give me 1 second. I just want to see if there's anything that I left out. 1 second.
Right, Rebbe?
Yeah.
The guys here are asking again,
What's up to tonight, still?
Every year we got to do this.
Right, I know, and they ask you again.
Mr.
Burr. Right, Mr. Burr says everything is still cut off tomorrow.
Right.
Look at the Olafa. Okay, so make your
head. Focus, he brings
him. What does the Olafa
say? He has them all. He has even Kibbutz also.
What is he? Is he Paskin?
As you know, Tashbaras. He has the other ones that aren't included in the Machaber.
And he probably even worse.
He says the...
Does he Paskin Lamaisa?
Right. Just like, you know, Mr. Bruce says, you know, it's hard to be Megal.
That's what he says.
B'chein ein lirchot to l'saper l'chabes v'yom asiri aracha chatzav.
Well, Meika didn't hold his mother, but the only thing is that I don't know if it's kedai for the whole yeshiva to for Hesed to be knowing that when are we going to do a fachatas. I don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
A person has to do it. I mean, you have to be a chacham also. You know, sometimes Allah of Emor came. I mean, you chazal that Allah of Emor came. I mean, I don't think you should go against the whole tzibur except for this thing. So I don't think we should go against it and openly, you know what I mean, shave and do everything before chatzos. I think it's there's no real reason. Unless a person has to go to business, if there's some reason has to do it, it could be mekel. But stam a guy doesn't have any reason to do it, he should wait till chatzos ready. Another few hours, not going to kill him. If you have to, though, if you have a reason, you have to do it, so you can do it. If you're, I wouldn't do it fast, I'm going to put it that way. But for Hashi, just for no reason at all, I wouldn't do it. Let me put it that way.
Okay? The halacha of yeshiva bakarka.
Right.
Is that halacha per se in the base Knesset? Or would you even say if when a guy goes home last night?
Yes, that last year.
Seems, I mean, on the set, it seems, it's a halacha everywhere. Why? You see it's only base Knesset? Machabe
says the base Knesset.
Listen,
that is at home. Machabe says the base
Knesset?
Yeah.
Yes, you this last year.
That was the answer.
The answer was it applies even in the house.
What?
I was told it applies even in the house.
It says like this. In Tukuf Nun Tef Gimel, Leil Tishva V'Yomo Yoshvim V'Beis HaKnesses La'aretz Ad Tzila Samencha.
Well, what did it say? It says, "I'm wrong about Balila."
Okay.
I guess they a lot of people stay in the Beis Knesset all day.
You really need it. You make it.
Wait till tomorrow. Okay.
What?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions?
Yeah. This year, you went through the 9 days and not shaving, and you said that you can't shave with covered Shabbos?
That's what I said. You're arrested. The ref plus can that way, I think, is where we should go.
Now, even though in previous years, when they asked Ravon Salvechik, he said you could.
Yep. I know
you had agreed to it then.
Well, let me put it this way. I think that the Rav held you shouldn't shave in 9 days. I went up and back in this. I went to the sources. And my conclusion is I think we should do the Rav said. That's my final conclusion. I think we should do 9 days, don't shave. Even the cover shabbos.
Even though it's a minute to extend it to the whole 9 days.
Even though what?
Yeah, make it a dim, it's just for Chicago.
That's right. But that's what the Rav said. He held 9 days. That was a shita. Die, your Rav, who was Machalov. unless a person has a business or something else, that's a different story. But spell me, you should try to keep it 9 days.
Any questions?